Syria is high on the agenda as world leaders meet for the G20 summit. The talks continue between different players. On the sidelines of the summit, Russia's president has reiterated calls to find a political solution to the conflict in Syria. With different interests playing out and complicating the situation on the ground in Syria, we ask, what is the prospect for peace? Will it be possible for countries with vested interests to come together for joint efforts, as Putin put it? Let's find out in this edition of The Debate.
The United States and Russia on Sunday tried to finalize a ceasefire deal for Syria, which would be the second truce this year after the first one collapsed. But U.S. President Barack Obama said, quote, grave differences remain, despite the two sides' round-the-clock efforts to clinch an agreement.
We have grave differences with the Russians in terms of both the parties we support, but also the process that's required to bring about peace in Syria.
Speaking on the sidelines of a G20 summit in the Chinese city of Hangzhou, U.S. President Barack Obama said a cessation of hostilities is still miles away, and that he approaches any possible deal with skepticism, given the failure of a similar initiative in the past. The U.S. State Department also accused Russia of what it called backtracking on its Syria positions. A senior State Department official, who had earlier announced that an agreement on Syria is close, said there's no deal for now. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry confirmed the news.
An awful lot of technical things have been worked out. A lot of things are clear, but there still remain, as I say, a couple of tough issues we've got to figure out.
The U.S. official's comments come as Russian President Vladimir Putin has reaffirmed the Kremlin's stance that only politics can resolve the crisis in Syria. The political haggling comes at a time when Turkey has sent tanks across its southern border into Syria to allegedly fight Daesh terrorists. The Turkish military incursion has added another twist to an already complicated situation on the ground, and it's unlikely to be a game-changer. More than 5 years into the Syria conflict, numerous international efforts have fallen short of restoring peace to the war-hit country. Some analysts believe the U.S. president is pushing for a ceasefire now to buy its credit for himself before his term is over.
Obama is approaching the end of his term, and Syria and Libya, actually, those two disasters, he is responsible for both. He can't avoid responsibility for Syria.
It seems that after several international peace initiatives for Syria and the failure of almost all, the Syrian army is the only force capable of bringing about a shift on the ground. Syria's adversaries are accused of overlooking the fact, as it doesn't sell the goals for which they supported more than 5 years of war on Syria.
Let's start off by introducing our guests. Joining us from Atlanta is Jim W. Dean. He's the managing editor of Veterans Today. And joining us from London is journalist and political commentator Richard Millett. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us in this edition of The Debate here on Press TV. Now, Mr. Dean, I'll start off with you, if I may. Up until now, all efforts for resolution of the Syrian crisis or to bring about a lasting ceasefire have failed. But do you see any hope in this new push for the U.S. and Russia to come to some form of working understanding?
Actually, I do, because the Obama administration is running out of time, and he wants to go out at least on having the new ceasefire agreement established before we get into the November elections. And as always the case, they've gotten the easiest issues out of the way, but what remains are really the sticky ones, and the U.S. is really kind of caught here because Russia has been asking, we have to be able to separate the good domestic opposition from the foreign-backed terrorists so that we can bomb them without bombing so-called the good opposition that's agreed to be part of the political process. But the problem we have there is for the U.S. has been using Qatar and Saudi Arabia as a screen for not only funding some of these groups, particularly Jabhat al-Nusra, but also supplying them the advanced weapons that have been coming in. And to keep them, they've made a deal to keep them from being bombed, that they'll mix them in with the Free Syrian Army people so that Russia cannot bomb them. And this has allowed them to work together and continue contesting Syrian control of the country. And this is the loggerheads we're at now, is Russia is demanding that these groups somehow be separated so that there can be both sides' militaries can agree on who is going to be susceptible for bombing strikes. And I think the Saudis and the Qataris are screaming that they don't want the deal made that the groups that they've been supported would ever be bombed. And we're going to see over maybe the next 24 hours whether one side blinks and agrees to go ahead and do that.
All right, Mr. Millett, as you just heard Mr. Dean there say, there are obstacles. However, he seemed largely optimistic. Do you share that optimism?
Well, I really don't know how anyone can be optimistic about what's going on. This is an uneven war. To suggest that there are high-powered military equipment being supplied to the Syrian opposition is farcical. The only supremacy of the air is Russia and Syria jets, fighters who are bombarding their own civilians, Syrian civilians from the air. You can't compete with air supremacy with the likes that Russia and Syria have got. And let's remember that these are Syrian people. You might not like the actual divisions of the groups that they're into, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, but the mainstay is a Free Syrian Army. Syrian civilians who were bombed in 2011 just because they wanted to voice their democratic opinions against an absolute tyrant. And obviously there, the Free Syrian Army and those that support the Free Syrian Army, including America and all normal people around the world who would support the Free Syrian Army, who want these people to be free from a tyrant of Assad. The main problem that these, the obvious main problem, this is the main problem, the whole problem summed up, is that unfortunately Iran and Russia are supporting the continuation of Assad in charge of a country in which nearly 500,000 of his own civilians have died because of his actions. Now, if Assad doesn't go, then all we're gonna see is continued bloodshed in Syria.
All right, Mr. Dean, what do you make of that? Over here, Mr. Millett is talking about an unequal war, despite the fact that we do know that the militants on the ground have used weapons such as TOW missiles, etc. An unequal war, and the only solution is for Assad to leave.
Well, that was quite a tirade. Mr. Millett sounds like he's working as a public relations officer for the Free Syrian Army. And I would respond to him that I think that is kind of a joke. The Free Syrian Army probably would be pushing it to gain 10% in any kind of election. They've been a rump group, just a front group for the foreign powers that started this whole thing to balkanize Syria, and primarily to let Qatar, Bahrain, and Saudi Arabia get their oil pipeline through northern Syria so they could sell oil to the EU and undercut the Russians from having those energy sales, which is helping to modernize Russia, build their domestic economy, and also build up their defenses, which they don't want them to do. So that's an old, tired joke. The Free Syrian Army of 2011 is completely different than what's going on now. As far as the superior weapons, Veterans Today is an intelligence website. We have very, very good sources, not only in Syria, but around the region. And the TOWs and even the man pads have been flowing in large numbers during the former ceasefires. In fact, that's the reason they got into the ceasefires, so they could rearm the opposition. So we've got a standoff going here. The Syrian army is gaining on the Aleppo side. And then we've also got this curveball of a Turkey joined in, crossed the border, and they are inside Syria, and heaven knows when they are going to leave. They may have already de facto balkanized the country. So yes, they have superior air power, but the Syrian country is up against NATO, the Western powers, all of the Gulf money. I would hardly call that a fair fight.
All right, I don't want to get sidetracked here. Looking at the current statements made, at least by the Russian president, even the push by the U.S. to come to some form of agreement together on Syria. Mr. Miller, I put this question to you. There are fundamental differences on the positions of the U.S. and Russia when it comes to Syria, as you yourself have pointed out. However, it seems that right now nobody is looking at a final solution. However, people are working towards a lasting ceasefire agreement. Is that possible, though? Are the two sides willing to make the type of sacrifices from their fundamental positions to reach that ceasefire agreement?
I don't think so. I don't think Assad is trustworthy. Anyone that starves his own people, bombs his own people from the air, uses sarin gas and chlorine gas against his own people is not someone to be trusted in any way, shape or form with the future of millions of Syrians. I mean, Syria really doesn't exist anymore, let's face it. Assad is ethnically cleansing as we speak, getting rid of Sunni Syrians from the suburbs of Damascus, pushing them into the north, getting them away as far as possible to create a huge buffer zone for his what he sees as useful Syria. The Syria that he wants to have in the event that Syria as a country, well, it has collapsed. I mean, it has collapsed. To use this idea of balkanized is ridiculous. We're seeing a Syria that is ruled by Assad on one part and by ISIS on another part and by the Kurds on another part, and now Turkey's entered into the fray as well. So no, Assad cannot be trusted. You have to get Assad out of the picture, you have to get Daesh out of the picture, and then you have to have elections. Now, to say that the Free Syrian Army would only get 10% in an election, well, if that's what my colleague here calls intelligence, then there doesn't seem to be much intelligence there. Let's have an election. There will never be an election in Syria because Assad is a tyrant who doesn't want democratic and free elections. He just wants to murder anyone he disagrees with, as we've seen this whole civil war stemmed from that in 2011. So no, Assad is not to be trusted. There cannot be a ceasefire. They've always collapsed in the past, and as we speak, people are starving to death, and my colleague here doesn't, they don't even seem to come into the picture for him.
Well, there have been elections in Syria. I do know, Mr. Dean, that you have a response there. You were rolling your eyes in frustration, but hold on to your thought. Let me just quickly cross over to our social media pages and see what our viewers have to say about this.
The U.S. made a mistake from the onset. They should have launched dialogue from the beginning and not resort to a military campaign. Whatever their claims and reasons for supporting the militants, it's the Syrians that suffer. Remedy? For God's sake, Syria has suffered too much. Stop attacking Muslim countries. Both the US and Russia should stay back from Syria. America, with the help of regional allies, is supporting terrorists to take the country over from President Bashar al-Assad. The U.S. should keep away from taking the role of a democracy champion in the Middle East. Let the people of Syria themselves decide their fate without Assad. They need to get out of Syria. No drones, no troops. The U.S. presence there only makes things worse. The U.S. is backing militants like Daesh. both America and Russia plus their allies must back off. Two nations deciding another nation's fate without having any Syrians at the discussion table.
Well, those are just some of the comments left by our viewers as they continue this conversation on our social media pages. Getting back now, Mr. Dean, as you just heard there too, there is this general mistrust of any form of intervention in Syria, be it from Russia or from the U.S. Go ahead with your opinion.
I was going to comment on the elections that Mr. Malay suggested that we're continuing to flog Assad as this amazing election rigger. But the 2012 elections, they had major changes in running those. My team, we interviewed the Election Commission for about 90 minutes. And one of the things that they had done is the opposition parties had their representatives at every polling station in the country and at every vote count in the polling station. So this whole idea that Assad somehow rigged the election so that he could win them are ridiculous. I haven't seen anyone that's really was at the election call them rigged in any way whatsoever. As far as the jihadi groups leaving the Damascus area, I would have to tell Mr. Malay again that this was a negotiation that they agreed to. They wanted to get out of the Damascus area and go to Idlib province where things are quieter and they would have less fighting and things to have to take care of. So, but I do give him some credit and agree with him. I am not optimistic about after whatever ceasefire is announced, whether it will hold, because we have a process now in the past where whoever comes up on the short end of any ceasefire then begins to wreck it. And if Saudi Arabia and Qatar and some of these other countries like Turkey don't like the ceasefire, they have a lot of things that they can do, a lot of terrorist attacks, they can do bombings to break the ceasefire, blame it on other people, and keep the chaos going. So no matter how good a ceasefire you announce and what the major powers would agree to, if there's players out there like Saudi Arabia and the others that are going to do their own thing and the West and NATO are not going to confront them, there's always people that can wreck it. So that's really something to be pessimistic about.
All right, Mr. Millett, as both of you gentlemen have pointed out over here, is that the conflict in Syria right now, as we're seeing, is not between two parties. It's a multi-party conflict. Removal of Assad or the ending of Daesh by itself will not resolve the issue.
Well, I disagree. I think if you get rid of Assad, and you can then concentrate on getting rid of Daesh. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious, but unfortunately, Obama didn't fulfill his own red lines when Assad used chlorine gas on his own people. Obama said that would be a red line, and if that was crossed, then he would attack Assad. Unfortunately, he backed off from that. Assad's still in place, and since then, hundreds of thousands of more people have died. So if you do get Assad out of the picture, then you can retrain the Syrian army. All can focus. Everyone, every Syrian from both sides can then come together. It's an ideal situation. It may be a bit idealistic, but with Assad out of the picture, there's a possibility. And then they can concentrate as one, as a Syrian people, on getting rid on the main infiltrator, the main problem, which is Daesh fighting them in Syria and then in Iraq as well.
So, Mr. Millett, let me just get this straight. In your opinion, if Assad is removed from power, we will have the different factions that are fighting on the ground in Syria, be it under the Free Syrian Army or the other factions, will just lay down their arms, band together, support a nationalistic movement. The Kurds will agree to disarm as well. The Turkish military will leave Syrian soil. All this will just happen on its own?
Well, it's a possibility. I mean, you did put it very well there. Yes, some sort of national unity, all-out assault on Daesh.
Okay, Mr. Dean, what's your opinion of that?
I see this continued thing of Assad has to go, and yet Assad has really agreed to go after he loses the next election. We don't hear anything about the great powers have already agreed that we're going to have UN-sponsored elections. And depending on, based on what Mr. Millett has said, Assad has no chance at all of winning in a fair election. So what's the fear of their having Assad remain to be humiliated by only getting 10 or 15% of the vote in a fair election? But yet everybody seems to be terrified of him participating in the election. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out what that is because they know darn well that he will win. So they have no ball game in the future whatsoever without Assad there. And everybody also knows from a military point of view, and the Defense Department has mentioned this, that if Assad goes, depending on how things happen, and you create a void, you're not going to have a unified group to basically fight Daesh. The Syrian army with the Iranian allies and Hezbollah are the only force on the ground, even with the air power, that can really take on Daesh, and they have been doing it. And the U.S., based on the assets they've had, what they've done has actually been a joke. So the fear is they're trying to win. The West and NATO and the Gulf states are trying to win during the peace process what they were not able to win on the battleground. That's the bottom line, and that's what they're whining about now.
All right. I know, Mr. Millett, that you have a reaction there. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. I'd like to thank you both for joining us in this edition of The Debate. That was Jim W. Dean, the managing editor of Veterans Today, joining us from Atlanta. And joining us from London was journalist and political commentator Richard Millett. Unfortunately, time has gotten the better of us. From me and the entire team here in Saravan, it's goodbye.